And welcome back to the Constitutionals Podcast. I'm your host, Chad White. If you didn't know, this is the premier podcast for the website cpluscomedy.com. Like I just said, it's a website. Go there. Welcome back. Episode 291.7, a rare new interview. Can we talk about how I came in? My voice was so dry, but I need water. I've been editing the video for this interview, and yet my voice is just I haven't had any water since dinner. Dinner was an hour ago, hour and a half. What's going on? What's going on with me? If you didn't know, this is a premier podcast for websites. cpluscomedy.com. Like I just said, this website. Go there. I have an interview for you today, but what's very important, as I move the mic closer to my mouth, what's very important is that this is a person I've spoken to before. I love it. Don't you love it when I get a chance at redemption? I always joke, if I could go back, well, you know, I have a quote by good friend, Cyndi Lauper. If I could turn, Cher is what I meant to say, not Cyndi Lauper. Oh my God, why did I say Cyndi Lauper? Anyway, if I could turn back time, if I could find a way. I'm thinking of Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper. Dun, 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 bum, 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 bum. That's enough. I don't want to get a content strike. That's how good of a singer I am. Daniel Van Kirk is back in the building. I had a chance to talk with him about his new special that came out almost a month ago, called Rose Gold. It's his sophomore album on the Blonde Medicine label. God, Blonde. They should just call it Blonde Machine. Because every time I read it in an email, it's in my that's my problem. But they should cater to me. Rose Gold, as I mentioned, is his second album. It's a very funny album. If you want to watch the video, though, you can watch it on his YouTube channel. I should have saved that for later. Rose Gold is a Midwestern man's wish that we all stop finding ways to disagree and start high-fiving strangers again and party in Wisconsin. Daniel's so funny, and he's so insightful. And what I want to mention about our conversation is, A, I got to apologize for hanging up on him while he was saying the word bye. And I thought, and it's not that bad, but I literally thought about, I've been thinking about that for the past 7 years, since 2019. Right? Is that the math? When did I talk to him? 2017? How old is C Plus Comedy? 11. So around that time. So 7 years. 7 years ago is when I talked to him. 2017, I guess. Anyway, that was like, I have always been thinking about that. I'm not kidding. That's no joke. I think about it constantly. How he was like, he was saying something nice to me. And I was like, yeah, man. All right. See ya. Bye. It was before Zoom. I was recording off my phone, literally holding the phone up to my microphone. Daniel Van Kirk, Rose Gold is named after Daniel's grandmother, Rosemary. And in the special, he covers so much. And he has a very, very funny joke about Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville Resort. And I think there's some other words in there. But it's, as I mentioned to him, he came out guns a-blazing. He's so funny. He's a very, very funny person. And I enjoyed hearing his take on comedy and joke structure and how to make a joke work and why it works. And it wasn't necessary in the way that we brought it up. It just came up organically, especially when we just talked about Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville Resort. He said, this is why it works. This is how it works. Not just why, but also how. And why it's funny and everything. And then the different ways you can go about it. I mean, trust me. You can check out Rose Gold wherever you get audio albums. I'm looking at Apple Music, Spotify. Like I said, you can watch it on YouTube. I accidentally clicked on it. And you can also buy it, which I urge you to do. Support your comedians. We talked about Thanks Diane. That's what we talked about, his first album in 2019. So that's when I talked to him. 2020, 21, 22, 3, 4. So 5 or 6 years ago. Again, Daniel Van Kerk's a funny guy. You can also listen to him on Dumb People Town. He also with the Sklar Brothers. He also has it's a podcast. He also has another podcast with Rory Scovel called Pen Pals. I don't know if that one's still going. I don't think it is. But you can also check him out online on the internet at danielvankerk.com. And you can go to Instagram, Daniel Van Kerk, Facebook, Daniel Van Kerk, Dan Van Kerk, YouTube, Daniel Van Kerk Comedy. Rose Gold, check him out. Check him out. He's a funny guy. And if you get a chance to see him, watch him. I enjoyed this special, and I know you will too. Now enjoy the interview. CPlusComedy.com for everything. YouTube.com/CPlusComedy. We got podcasts, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, CPlusComedy. Bye. Chat Blackway. Hey, man. Thanks for sitting down with me. Actually, this is the second time we've done this. We actually first talked in, let's see, November 2019.
Yeah. Was it video, though? It wasn't video, right?
It wasn't video. You didn't get to see this beautiful face. I didn't get to see you.
I'm just such a – I have such a visual memory. I'm like, I would definitely remember. So, well, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, I've always wanted to – at the end of our last conversation, this is so stupid, and this is only something I would remember. But you were like, you're very nice. And at the end, you go, "Hey, if I'm ever in Atlanta, we'll meet up and like we'll talk and everything." I was like, "Sure," and I was just so nervous. I was like, "Oh yeah, sure, okay." And then I hung up as you were saying the word "bye," and it was just so,
oh, no sweat. That's so the type of shit I would remember too. Yeah,
I've been living off of that adrenaline for 5 years now.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
So how's it going? Are you you touring right now?
No, I'm on a bit of a break. I did a whole bunch of press last week. And now, yeah, this week is going to be a little bit more chill. I won't go back out until the first weekend of May. I'm in Denver, first weekend. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. That's great. What's it been like promoting this album? Is this the second one or the third one? What number?
Second album, first special.
First special. So, okay.
Yeah. It's been good. People seem to really like it. The album drops on May 3rd. Special's out right now on YouTube, over at my YouTube channel. And people like it. The response has been really, really good. So,
yeah.
I like it. I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, comedy's not like music. You can't do it without hearing what people think of it. You don't know if it works or not. So, yeah.
I watched I'm halfway through full disclosure, and it is just it's great to like sit down and watch, because you come out with like a full force, just like a show of force. It feels, this is not a detriment to you or to the production.
Sure.
It feels like it was shot last week, and because it's just
nice.
Evergreen and funny and just relatable, and I think that's what's really prescient and important about your stand-up is it just makes you feel like you're part of the crowd, because you're animated on stage, moving about, and just like talking to each individual person as you tell a joke.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I think, and I might have said this last time we talked, but I would rather comedy in general, but certainly my comedy, be more inclusive than exclusive. I just never really operated in that space. I come from a huge family and a huge group of friends, and I usually feel like if the means are there, the more the merrier. So that's good to hear, because I always feel that way when I'm doing a show. I talked about this in Thanks Diane. I think I say it in the album. Like, we're all in this room together. Like, this is who the universe decided to put together. It's my show, but this is it. This is the group for the night. So it's, that is kind of, I think, where I come from in terms of the tone or atmosphere that I want to create when I'm doing a show.
Yeah. I mean, you even say as much in the special, when you're like, I don't care who you voted for. I don't want to know this about you. I don't want to know that about you. And it all, the crowd is along for the ride, and that makes a world of difference. Especially, to get to that part, the crowd has to be along for it. People are there for your wild talking about the strip club, that strip club name, and just
Cruising
like,
Chubbies.
yeah. I mean, they have to be there and be, present and ready to go, because not only like your comedy is truthful as much as it is comedic, and
No, thanks.
a lot of there's not a lot of people who have that good balance between the truthful aspect and the funny aspect.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I just want, I just, I, it's a lament, and also obviously, as you have heard, and anybody who listens to Rose Gold will know. I'd really like it if we could just have a good time. And I do say, and especially I go, hey, there's a lot of things that I really do care about and I want to change, but for the most part, like, I don't need to fight with everybody about it anymore. I need to fight for my cause, right? I need to fight for what I believe in. I need to fight for change that I would like to see. But I'd really like to just have a drink with somebody on a plane without us having to bring up anything that's going to piss the other person off for no other reason than some sort of posturing about what cult of personality you belong to. And that could go in 100 different directions. And I've to hopefully our country's credit, that bit has gotten applause breaks in the Pacific Northwest, in Texas, in Boston, in the Midwest. I think that there's a lot that I think, I could go personally, but the whole point is I'm not going to. I could go on personally about stuff that I would like us to work on or change for the better, but I think at the same time, there seems to be a fatigue in terms of just having to like fight all the time. And maybe to be a little I don't know, late 70s John Lennon romantic, if we like stop fighting for a little while, it'll be harder to start fighting again, or maybe that will change the viewpoints people have on what they're fighting about. But see, I don't like, and I believe all that, but in terms of doing a show, in terms of hanging with you and talking, I'd really like to just have a good time.
No.
So, but that's on those terms.
Yeah, I know, and I get it, and that's just like an easy thing to ask, but a hard thing to accomplish. What happens when you have that asshole who just wants to keep posturing, who wants to keep showing his peacock feathers or her or theirs or what have you? And like, how do you confront that, whether you're on stage or whether you're just one-on-one in a bar situation?
I think you just try to meet people where they are, even if you have to leave them there. And but I've had stuff like that. I remember I was doing a show in Texas, and I said I live in California, and that got boos. And I was like, "What? What are you booing? I know what you might think you're booing. I know what somebody might have like told you is worthy like booing about, but you don't even know what I'm gonna say. You don't even know what I'm talking about. I just said the word." And then I go into the story about the guy at Big Bear who's like, "Take your mask off," and those same people like cheered. And I said, and I called them out. I go, "Oh, so have you changed your stance on people in California? Because a couple of minutes ago you booed, but now you've heard one possibly, but not made up story about a person who may or may not exist in an interaction that is cherry picked among millions of people who live there, and now you're cheering for it." I was like, "You see how paper thin this is?" And to their credit, they were like, "Yeah, you're right, you're right." But I was like, "See how none of it matter? Like your booing was pointless because then you cheered against the thing you just booed for." And it was sort of it was done in that tone of like, "I'm not kicking you out. I'm not calling you an idiot or whatever. I'm just saying like, look at this from a higher level. Like, what were you booing?" So, I think it's somebody tweeted out once. They're like, I wish I could remember what her name was. She's a great female comic, but I can't remember who it was specifically. But she said, White men don't know the power they would have if they just looked at their friend and said, "Hey, man, that's fucked up." I not to go into like that deep of what that sort of stuff is intoning, but I think like you can put your hand on somebody's shoulder or not, but either way, you can look at somebody and just go, "Hey, why don't we just have a good time? I don't know about all that. Let's just have a good time tonight." And then the person by their nature has to decide whether or not they are trying to not have a good time.
Right,
You know
okay.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's just sort of the energy I try to bring to it, is like, can we just have a good time? You know, I've had, just being in California, I've had flight attendants like say stuff like, "Oh, I bet you hate it there." I'm like, "No, I love it there."
Right.
And I'm like, "Why would you want that? Just be like, that's nice. Just say what you would say if I said I lived in Michigan, or if I lived in Iowa, or if I lived in West Virginia, or
Yeah.
what, Colorado, whatever. Just go, you like that? Must be nice. Who cares?"
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I'd like us to just have a good time.
You know, I was thinking those the Texas people who booed and then cheered, they obviously they could see the movie Civil War and be completely blown back, like, whoa, Texas and California are teaming up. This is so strange.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's wild. Yeah, because a lot of people, you know, they say like, you know, you choose your friends or whatever. I think there's a lot of people on every side of the spectrum in terms of our society who are like, they're just being told who their friends are.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you don't even know those people. You don't even, I mean, dude, 2 weeks ago, like Kid Rock went on TV wearing a Budweiser hat after like invoking thousands of idiots to hate that because he
Right.
shot it with an AR-15. It's all fake. So just drink whatever beer you want to drink and just be nice to the person next to you until they give you a reason not to, and then just go somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a similar
Yeah.
vein, I used to work at CNN here in Atlanta, and I was in the control room, and almost every single day you would have a producer walk in and go, "This is going to be a shitty show." And I'm just thinking, you're putting that energy out into the
All right.
world. You're
Yeah.
creating that negativity. Like, it's we have 30 minutes until the show. Just because we don't have all the stories, or you know something breaking is going to happen in the next 10 minutes, doesn't mean that we're automatically going to be
Right.
on the back end of everything. I think you know a lot of what you're saying is you have to, like, well, you just it's create your own energy, create what you want, put out into the world what you want to feel back. And if you're putting out animosity, then you're going to get animosity towards you, and there's no way
Think
around it.
so. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, the person who says we're gonna have a shitty show, like that's your starting point then. So now you're doing the whole show being like, can we dig out of that expectation? If you started the show from like, I think we're gonna have a great show tonight, well, now you're spending the whole show trying to maintain that expectation. It's like, look, why start there? Why, I say it in the special, like, why wear a shirt that starts an argument? To what end? To what, so that like, other angry people can like you instantly, even though they know nothing about you. They might find out two things about you and go, "I don't like you either." It's like, it's all fake. So, yeah, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it both ways. That's why I say in the special, the guy who's wearing an "I'm with her" shirt, I would be like, "I don't care what side you're on, but like, can we not wear that to the Applebee's? Like, can we just, let's just not, literally and figuratively, let's just not bring that to the table tonight. Let's just get some poppers." And I mean jalapenos or the other kind, whatever you like.
Hey, what's going on? Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah.
Had you always been a person that wanted to bring that to the stage or bring that out into the world, or that feeling, that evokingness of like, let's just be chill, everybody? Or was that something that you had to develop for yourself internally?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, my family's really big, and we have a lot of we celebrate birthdays and holidays and everything together, and we all like a good cocktail, and we don't have any angry drinkers in my family. Like, fights and violence has never been an issue. So I think that that's having a good time together, purely like whether it's like playing cards or sitting around a fire pit or sitting in the garage talking, conditioned me to not really have any of that trauma. I don't know if you want to put that in italics, but it, so I think for me, it's always like, hey, let's just have a good time. Like, why would we not? And then my years of being a door guy in Chicago and in LA, I think, really, honed the muscles of like, hey, buddy, it's all right. Like, wait, we're just here to have a good time. Like, let's just relax. We don't need to do that at all. And then I think that, yeah, I kind of be that type of person. I don't know that I set out, I think in comedy, probably with most art, but the one I know more about than the others is, they always say like you get finding your voice. So I don't know that it's something like I sought out, but I think that it, you want every show to go well. And for me, every show going well is that we're kind of all rowing in the same direction. We want to have a good comedy show. We want to have a good time. And now I just got to be funny. And so I think that all those sort of things like manifested into the type of comic that I am. It's like, I'm not here to piss you off. I'm not here to provoke you by things I say. That doesn't mean there is any provocation in anything. I mean, I think if you make a joke about having sex with a 79-year-old woman at a Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville Resort and casino or resort in Lake Conroe, Texas, that obviously has some nature of provocation in it. Like, whoa, that's like you're gonna get a response by saying that. But I don't do that unless it's tied to a joke. Whereas I think some people make the mistake of kind of being more provocative than funny, because you get a response, but I don't know that you get a laugh. Unless the laugh is, I can't believe you said that, but that's not the same as a joke. So yeah, I think it just kind of all being who I am and where I come from and wanting to have a good time, it kind of, those are all the recipes or the ingredients into the cake of what comes out on the other end. So.
In passing, what you just mentioned about that, the joke about the Jimmy Buffett and the woman at the hotel restaurant bar pool, and she I noticed that you do a really good job at painting a picture in your jokes and really setting the scene, and before you deliver the punchline. And it's tough. I think it's really tough for, there's a lot of comedians that I see that all have a little bit of difficulty doing that. But then there's people like you or Gary Goldman, who are able to just really set the scene, set the mood, and then deliver this punchline. How do you write jokes like that? Which is, I guess, the high school way of asking it. That's this question. I was Judd
No,
Apatow interviewing Jay Leno.
I think every comic has a style that I think that they're kind of more driven towards, or that they with brute force choose to be. And I think that naturally, just in my life, I lean towards like telling a story. It's a thing for me where like I could do a whole hour of stories, but I feel like that could get a little exhausting. And I really relish and also like doing comedy that can be observational as well. So like, for example, Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville Resort in Lake Conroe, Texas, I'm sort of making observational jokes about that place, but it's also here's what happened to me when I was there. Whereas later on in the special, something like the Hawaii story is a pure straight up story. I have jokes in that about that story. And so then if you get to the part where you have to have exposition, that's where you or I feel like I need to have jokes, because otherwise that can get boring and that can get a lull. And I think sometimes that can be hard for people that maybe don't tell a lot of stories or aren't naturally at it. It's like, how do you get to it, right?
Right.
Like, what's the payoff here? Because your starting point might be like, you're not going to believe this. And your ending point might be like, isn't that crazy? But like in between there, that has to be entertaining. And so, for example, I think, I benefit from also being a comedy writer and have written pilots and movies and stuff like that, that like you find a way to say something interesting that keeps the audience engaged rather than just like, and then they go, and then I go. So for example, in the Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville story, I think I say something like, and then next to me, I just hear mid-drag. So that already tells you about this person. And then obviously I act it out and I'm like, what do I say first? And that voice, and then like that, that obviously that act out. And some comics don't do act outs at all. They just stand in one place and tell jokes. And I am also very jealous of those comics. That is, sometimes I wish I could just fucking stand still and tell jokes. But yeah, it's about finding that where in this exposition is it funny, and how descriptive can you get? I say, what should I say? She goes, well, and I turn to look and I say, leather skinned 79-year-old silver-haired fox of a woman. Her bangs are bigger than the St. Louis Arch. And actually, I ran the hour up until the premiere dropped, but we shot it in November. And I added a joke in there where I would say, her bangs are bigger than the St. Louis Arch. She looked like how they draw old women on Hallmark cards. And so everybody's seen that. Everyone knows exactly what that is. It's also funny because it's a shared reference. So everybody's in on the joke. It's funny imagery, and also it's exposition because it tells you, like you said, it paints that picture for you. And that's a little different to every single person. It's way more different when you leave that line out. It's whatever they picture in that. I mean, a lot of people probably picture, is it Cameron Diaz's aunt or whatever from Something About Mary or her roommate or whatever? Like, yeah. But it's different. It's different. In the Boston story, and this clip is out, but I say that he was the most Boston man I ever seen, and the joke, and then the third one is he looked like he was wearing the hoodie that he wore the day he got married, and that in tones. But you'd be amazed how many people say to me, "You should say he was wearing the New England Patriots hoodie that he wore the day he got married," and that is a. Specifically, it's a stronger reference, but that's not what everybody would have picked. So I leave it broad on purpose because some people are picturing just an old ratty, his construction job shirt. Some people are picturing a Bruins sweatshirt. Some people are picturing a Celtics sweatshirt. So I want them to have whatever is in their mind because if I make it too much, I've taken away. I've shown you what's in the trunk in Pulp Fiction, and a little, but I'd rather just it sometimes just give you the glow, and the glow is he's wearing the hoodie. You get to pick the hoodie. Funnier to everybody too. So yeah, it's different. For me, it's about knowing when I need to be super specific and when I want the audience to fill in the gap for themselves, which will make it funnier to them.
That felt like a seminar, and I feel as though that you could take.
Sorry.
No, that's good. No, it's good because that leads to my next suggestion. Like you could just write an entire, not a, not, I mean, a novella, on using this one special and dissecting each one of those jokes and really explaining, not explaining why it's funny because we know why it's funny. It just makes us laugh, but how you came up with those structures and everything, because I think for comedy writing, layers are important. And not everybody can be Mitch Hedberg. Sometimes you do have to take that route that really will lead you down into your mind so that you can show people, hey, this is why I'm funny, this is why it works. And I think you just did that succinctly, which is
Oh,
great
thanks,
for
man.
you as a comedian.
Thank you.
you know, the world, we have a world full of podcasting, we have a world full of TikToks now. How does a comedian just continue to stand out when it comes to people being torn left and right and up and down with all these different medians and just really focusing on this comedian, Daniel Van Kirk, has a good hour out. And so I need to get them to watch
I
it.
wish I knew. I wish I knew, Chad. I would tell you. I think that the strongest ways right now are probably churn out content a minimum of 5 days a week. Stand up clips, if that's what you're trying to do, as much as you can. And then I think the other one is really shared audiences in terms of going on shows or podcasts where they are going to clip that and put that out and put you in front of those people. That would be my best thing. It's hard though. I mean, it's a constant. I think we are in a complete sea change in terms of like where things will go. I mean, there's a chance that in the next 10 to 15 years, people's YouTube channels will be the new networks. So somebody who has like 50 million YouTube subscribers, you would pitch to them your show to put on their channel because that's the network. And they sell the ads and you share the revenue. And that's exactly what NBC does. That's exactly what every other, you know, channel with commercials does. Or it'll be a buyout and they'll go, yeah, we'll give you X amount of money for a year for you to put that show on our deal. We keep all the revenue we can make on it. You're happy with the number you get, and we take on the risk of seeing how much we can get. And that's what essentially Netflix does, and HBO does, is because you're not getting a lot of royalties and there's not shared ad revenue. You know, it's really going to be about relationships more so. You know, it's always has been. You know, somebody writes a show and you're their friend and you're an actor and they want to put you in it, or someone is a director and they want to put you in it. But now that's going to be even like mainlined into that friend of yours could end up having a huge YouTube channel. Just don't become somebody's friends because of that, because that's shitty. But yeah, I think that's, you know, that's where it's going to go. And if you're a person who's like, oh, how do I get my stuff on a huge person's YouTube channel? Or their social media? I don't know. In my world, you're a really good comic and you do really good comedy in your scene. And hopefully you meet that person when they come into town and you open for them. And then they give you dates on the road. And then eventually they say, hey, when you shoot your special, let me know. I'll just put it up on my YouTube channel and we'll split what I make off of it. That happens. That's happened. How much more that'll happen? I don't know. Is it likely? I feel like it's a lot more likely than the current model. Because like even for me, like I put it on my YouTube channel. There's two places I could have gone down the road towards putting it on. Neither were like HBO or Netflix. I'm not gonna like posture here. But you know, there would have been money involved with both of those. And I thought to myself, yeah, but like, this is my first special. I want everybody to see it. I don't have a special out there. I don't put out a ton of like stand-up clips. So what's the best way for me? Because even if it is some of these other platforms, it's going to be behind a paywall, or maybe everybody doesn't have that, or they put restrictions on what I can clip up and put out on my own channel. I would just want everybody to see it. You know, I want 60 more people to come out to a show in whatever city I'm in. That's what I want. So what's the fastest way to that? Well, just put it out yourself. Well, you don't get this guaranteed money. Right. But everybody can see it. You know, if Netflix comes to me, or even one of these other people, and they go, here's our marketing budget. And this is where your billboards are going to be, and buses are going to be, and everybody is going to fucking know that your special's out. Then, okay, look, let's talk. But
Yeah.
I don't know. You just got to put it where people can see it. So
And
that's what I'm trying to do.
you're not the only one with the same thought, because I've seen so many comedians just go, just fucking put on YouTube, because that is the easiest avenue. And YouTube is what, 2005 was when I noticed it blew up. I think it came out in 2004, but like it started in, and then, if, 10 years ago, if you said, hey, this is where comedians are putting their things, and wait, it's 2024, excuse me, 20 years ago, if you said this is where comedians are putting their things and putting their specials, and this is where you can see full episodes of other shows and everything, then I'd be like, this is insane, like that's crazy. I'm still watching Andy Richter Controls the Universe in
Sure.
17 parts,
Yeah.
it's in 5-minute chunks. It's flabbergasting, and like, so now I feel like TikTok and Instagram and all these other places have just press fast forward on these on how we have to develop and put things out. And like, I even saw it when I was at Cartoon Network before I was at CNN, and I love the idea of owning whatever I put out. And I don't, as much as I would love to, work with Warner Brothers or Netflix or whomever, having I, we would be in meetings at Cartoon Network, and they go, well, we're losing the first 20 years of Sesame Street. We're losing
Sure.
these episodes of Steven Universe. Everything's getting off of platform because we're trying to save money. And that is just like this, one of the scariest parts is that you can't even
Right.
have your special because, they're going to take Daniel Van Kirk's special off, even though it's only been on there for 8 months. So
Right.
I think, you and other comedians who are like you are just way ahead of the curve right now, because I would rather have 10,000 views as opposed to 10,007 views, even though it's on a wider platform.
Right. I just think it, you just got to put it where people can see it, and I think people like Sam Morril, and who did that back in like 2020 or 2021, and Shane Gillis did it. And then, they both have specials now on Netflix, but there is, if you still want to go watch an hour of their comedy, it's available. And you probably became such a fan that maybe you signed up for Netflix, or you already were. And I'm not, I don't care. Like, I think I don't mind being straight up. Like, I'm not on Netflix's radar. They don't want my special. That's not because it's not good. It just, they're in business elsewhere. That doesn't mean that won't change. I'd love to be in business with them, but they make great stuff. But all those places, their job is to make money and put content out that makes them money. And there is nothing wrong with that, because that's what they do. My job is to put out stuff that I believe in, that I like, that reflects who I am as an artist, and hopefully that makes money. So when they go, nobody's watching this after the third minute, they're right to move it from their perspective, because they're not making money. So when I, if I own it all, like you said, I don't, six people could have watched this special. I don't have to do, I don't, that doesn't dictate what's going to happen to it, because I didn't put it out to make money. Would I love to? Would I love somebody to go, hey, we saw your special and we're doing a convention in Vegas and we want to pay you 50K to do a corporate gig because we liked it? Awesome. Great. Let's do it. But that's the hope, that what I'm putting out does, allow me to keep eating.
I like that. I just it's yeah, comedy in the media industry right now is just in a tough spot, and the more that we can own it, the more that we can do with it, I think.
Sure. And the more people can see it, there's more comedy fans than ever. This is way bigger than the 80s and 90s comedy boom. Way
100%.
bigger. Yeah.
Well, Daniel, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I appreciate you sitting down with me again. This has been a
Dude, I love
blast.
talking to you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a smart guy,
You'll
and
probably hang up on me. You'll probably hang up on me while I'm saying it, but next time I'm in Atlanta, hit me up, dude.
I'm not. I'm nowhere near the end. Click end button. I'm scared of that. I'm keeping my pets away from pressing the button. But congratulations on Rose Gold. It's a fantastic
Thanks, man.
special. I'm gonna finish the rest of it right now. Like truly.
I
And
hope you dig it.
that's a big thing because I never finish specials anymore. So take that to heart.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I think you'll dig it. The closing story is a true story that happened before a show that I did in Boston, and I think it's a pretty good one. I started doing it before the pandemic, and it never went away, and I never got sick of it, and it made it through all that stuff to be the closer on the special and the second album. So hope you enjoy the rest of Rose Gold. Hope everybody else enjoys all of it. So.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And again, congratulations. And thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks, man. You too. Talk to you soon.
See ya.
Bye.